Going to start off the show with an email.
Wow. How did you know, Luke? How did you know?
Honestly, I reckon I could just say that at the start of every episode without even asking you, and there will be one.
Well, yeah, of course there's going to be one. I'm Sam.
Yes.
Hi, Sam.
Hello. A 15-year-old boy from Wales, and your two episodes on vaccines have really helped me, as the history of medicine and specifically vaccines come up in my history curriculum. And I just wanted to tell you how useful and funny all three of you are.
Hey.
Thank you.
That's good.
I'm useful.
Yeah.
Well.
Sometimes.
That's part of a group.
Let's start the show.
You're one third
before
useful.
I cry.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutford.
Good day.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about cannibalism and liquid cats.
What?
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like you're going to talk about cannibal cats who take other cats and liquefy blend them.
Yeah.
And then drink them.
The cannibals and the cats are not related.
Separate things.
Okay.
Separate things. It's lots of mini episodes today.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. This is like a best bits.
Do they have a common theme?
Stuff that Corey couldn't make whole episodes out of.
Shut up.
He's made a big Sci-Guys smoothie
big
for
Frankenstein
us.
Frankenstein episode.
Yeah, so there is a common theme. Okay. And I will get into that
is
right
it
now.
Cats and cannibals.
Well, no, that's not a common theme because I told you those two things aren't related.
Catapults.
Catapults.
Catapults. I want to do an episode on catapults.
Just catapults. You do it. Okay, right. Next episode. Next episode, you do it on catapults.
All right. I'll look right. up something. I'll make an hour of interesting stuff about catapults.
You know what? No.
You better.
Next bonus episode for December.
Yeah.
Do one on catapults.
What, for Patreons?
For Patreons.
What, because it's not a good idea?
Because it's such a good idea, it'll convince everyone
Corey's
to
like,
sign up to Patreon.
I don't have any ideas that are bad enough for the bonus episode.
We only give our patrons the best episodes.
That's true.
So the Nobel Prize is something we've spoken about many times before on this podcast. It's a prize for great scientific achievements, and it's certainly an important thing. But what about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories that still make you think?
You mean the... Ig Nobel Prize.
The Ig Nobel Prize.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the remit for an Ig Nobel Prize is it makes you laugh first and then makes you think. So like previous examples of that was someone won an Ig Nobel Prize for levitating frogs.
Yeah.
But it was actually to do with something to do with medicine or something like that.
We spoke about him before.
Have we?
Yeah, we have.
I don't retain information
well,
after we
that
stop
was actually,
recording.
That was an episode with Jake.
Was it?
So Luke wasn't here.
Oh, okay, good. Didn't listen back, that's fine.
You've been called out, sir.
Yeah, it was actually, he was the, I was going to get onto that later, but since Luke spoiled it, I'll get into it right now. Andrew Geim, I still don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
He is the only person so far to have won a Nobel Prize and an Ig Nobel Prize.
Brilliant.
Not for the same thing. I mean, he wasn't,
make
he,
it happen,
he wasn't far off. He invented graphene and, like you said, levitated frogs.
Which is basically the same thing.
Do you know what the Ig Nobel Prize is? I know you do, so you're not answering this one.
Okay.
Do you know what the Ig Nobel Prize is?
Didn't you just say?
Yeah, but can you remember?
Oh, the Ig Nobel Prize is for like weirder scientific achievements that then make you... They're like actual scientific... They have scientific discoveries and like actual scientific basis, but they're just ridiculous.
They sound ridiculous.
They
seem
ridiculous.
Ridiculous on the surface. So
they
yeah.
seem ridiculous, but they do actually...
Exactly. So it's for...
It's like science memes.
It is actually a discovery or an achievement.
Another one in the past was, I believe someone won an Ig Nobel Prize for doing a study on why ponytails go left to right when you're running, you're going up and down.
So you
bounce up and down, but your ponytail goes left to right. And it was super interesting about like dynamics of like semi-liquid bodies. I can't remember, but something along those lines.
There's a lot of really cool Ig Nobel Prize winners. And it's kind of the inspiration for this podcast a little bit, you know?
It was, yeah.
It was.
It was one of the things you brought up when we were discussing.
Yeah, it was one of the things Luke
the
brought
concept.
Up. Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, you
As
you
I
did.
Said, I don't retain information.
not even your own information.
No. That blank look on your face when I said that really said it all.
I don't take on information that isn't relevant to me.
Shut up.
But yeah, it is the prize of the podcast, effectively. It came from, you know where it came from, Luke?
I do not.
Okay, I'll tell you where the name came from first. So ignoble is a word.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which means the opposite of noble.
Ah.
prize. So initially, it was organized by the scientific humor magazine, the Annals of Improbable Research. And since then, they've just been running it. So Mark Abrams was the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research, and he just decided one day to give out awards for weird scientific achievements. And it's become this massive thing. So it started in 1991, and we've been doing it for the past however many years that is, 28?
That's more recent than I would have thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Nobel Prize isn't that much older.
Really?
Yeah, like 50 years.
Okay, right? Yeah, that's double. Kind of what I was thinking.
So double.
Well, yeah, I mean, not that much. I mean, look.
I'm 25, and I'm not nearly 50.
So it's still not that far off 50.
But in that line, I'm also not far off birth, age. James.
I mean, you're not far off of someone else's birth. What if you have a child soon? Okay, I was wrong. The Nobel Prize was first awarded in 1901. So it was a long time after.
Yeah, it's a few more than 50 years.
Look, in a couple hundred years, they'll basically be the same.
Wasn't long ago, more long ago than the First World War.
Yeah, which wasn't that long ago.
No.
They were in the same century.
Neither was my creation.
Not far off the 90s.
My creation, Luke.
As we've established in this podcast, the universe began, from my perspective, when I began. So anything that's before that is like eons ago compared to me.
Or it was seconds ago. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Shut up.
Time doesn't exist outside
it. Shut up.
Does anyone know? I don't know why I keep on asking. Does anyone? You're the only one that will know this. Do you know what you win for winning the Nobel Prize?
I actually don't know.
You've told us this before.
Have I?
I'm pretty sure you have. But
I don't think I have.
I've forgotten.
You don't win any money.
You don't win any money, no.
Unlike that's the Nobel Prize where you win $1 million.
Yeah, just a lot of money.
I'd rather win that.
Yeah.
Would I?
Well, no, okay. So
would I rather be a meme or rich?
Depends what you win.
It really, okay, so the first prize really was a meme. And they changed the prize every single year. So the first prize was a mirror, a hand mirror, with an audio chip in it so that when you raise it up to look at it, it screamed at you.
No, screw the million. I want that. I want that mirror.
I want a screaming mirror.
Well, James, I know what I'm getting you for your Christmas.
Please find me a screaming mirror.
You'd have to win an Ig Nobel Prize first, Luke. That's a tough one.
That's a really thoughtful Christmas present, actually.
I will present James with an Ig Nobel Prize.
What, Luke?
For editing the podcast consistently every week.
I feel like you're missing what Ig Nobel Prizes are handed out for, but I like that.
I think you should shut up.
Yeah, so not only do you get gifts such as a screaming mirror, you also get given them by actual Nobel laureates. So people that have actually won Nobel Prizes show up to hand out
the biggest kick in the balls I've ever heard.
it's like getting a Razzie, which is like the opposite of the Oscars, from Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
You did a terrible job. So says I, Meryl Streep. There you go.
Here are the actual winners presenting you with your screaming mirror.
It's a runners up award, effectively. They also got they've also got lectures that they do. So you've got 60 seconds once when you win your prize to go up on stage and then kind of tell everyone what it's about. Which isn't very long.
That's not a lot of time, is it?
It's not a lot of time. So the Saturday after the prize giving ceremony, everyone gets about 10 minutes to just go through what they've discovered.
To who?
I was going to say, back?
To whoever shows up.
So effectively, nobody.
Well, no.
Apart from people who are there to present.
We should go.
Yeah,
can we go?
That's actually, I've got this whole section at the end of the podcast about why we should go.
Okay.
So
let's
get to that then.
Are they in London?
No. It's far away, but it's doable.
Well, maybe we can use all of the millions of dollars of Patreon money we've raised to get a SciGuys trip.
Go subscribe to patreon.com/SciGuys to get us to the Ig Nobels.
And we might bring two of you along with us.
Ooh.
What?
Don't make a promise.
I will get to it. Oh, do you know what? Okay, I'll tell you now. Okay. Shall I just tell you now?
Tell us at the end.
I'll tell you at the end. So have I told you that 10 prizes are awarded each year?
No.
So they've got prizes for every Nobel category, and then also some more, like education and biology, and just other scientific subjects. So there's a lot of them that win. Effectively, what I'm going to do today is just go through some of the winners that I quite like.
All right, cool. Yeah.
I think you should play a game with us where you tell us what the experiment was, and we try and guess what it was trying to discover.
What it was actually trying to discover.
Yeah, like you'd say.
Okay. That's a fun game.
Oh, what the point of it is. Okay, yeah. Good. So as I've mentioned, Andre Geim was a winner of the Nobel Prize. He was the man who levitated a frog. Do you have any idea why he would levitate a frog?
You're trying to make me remember to weeks ago.
I think it was something to do with medication. I'm going off some vague recollection of a Radio 4 show called The Infinite Monkey Cage. And I think it was something to do with medication where they were basically trying to suspend like living matter in the air for some reason. But I can't remember what it is. Please tell us. Please tell us. But it was using sound waves, I think. Or was it using the magnetic
waves
of the magnetic dipoles of the water in the frog? Was that what it was?
Basically. So it was it was kind of proving that everything is a little bit magnetic.
Yeah.
To the point,
nothing to do with medicine then.
It can be used in medicine. That was kind of the application of what they discovered. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really the goal. So the levitating frogs thing came from what Geim called Friday night experiments, which was just when, you know, once a month or once every now and then he would have one person just work on something ridiculous or weird or something that wouldn't work in his lab.
That's like Pixar when they have like 20% of their time, they can just make some random thing that they want to do.
Exactly. And that led to, you know, the discovery of graphene. From
what?
Yeah, in the same.
Oh, you mean that thing, the Friday night experiment.
Yeah, the Friday night experiments.
Not levitating a frog led to the discovery
of
graphene.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So he says that the levitating the frog led to it in terms of, you know, the idea of levitating a frog.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of set up the dominoes that led to graphene.
I forgot the relationship there. Because I know the graphene had to do with like taping. It's like taping some lead.
Yeah, so pencil lead, so graphite. Yeah, they were graphite. They were trying to clean it. And by cleaning it, by pulling the graphene apart with graphite apart with tape, you got a really, really thin layer of carbon.
Yeah.
Which was graphene. It was a really cheap and easy way to make this amazing substance.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't really for medicine. It can be used for medicine. It was just to kind of see what would happen. Mostly. This one is one that is not like the others, in that there is no point. He just kind of did it.
Okay.
Yeah. But good on him. Good on him, Mr. Andre. Left and right scrota often differ in temperature, whether you're naked or not.
Scrota meaning balls.
Yep.
Okay. Well, interesting. I would guess that maybe that has something to do with temperature regulation.
Yeah, that's all I can think of.
Because one of the balls hangs lower than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which way around it is. And so the one is closer to the body than the other one. And so they always would have different temperatures, because the whole reason why you have an external like sack for your mating organs is in order that they can move closer and further away from the body to regulate their own temperature. So is that why?
It was mostly for fertility, really. They were just, they were looking into fertility. So they were looking into fertility of postmen in France.
Postmen?
Yeah, so French postmen.
Postman Pratt.
I don't know why it was French postmen. Look, you choose one group of people and you just study them.
Sure. Okay?
But it was a case of just seeing how it affected reproduction. And they discovered that one is always warmer than the other, regardless of any external factors.
Sure.
Right. So,
again, there's not any real point in this.
How much just warmer? Significantly warmer? Or just a little bit.
Hold on, let me find. You know, it doesn't give me the exact temperature of these 11
pointing. Show your working, scrotum studiers.
They asked 11 postal workers to stand for 90 minutes, and they measured their scrotums every 2 minutes.
What a delightful job that must have been. I assume what you mean is they measured their scrotum's temperature.
The temperature, not the size.
They got out a tape measure. Has it shrunk?
Well,
that's how you measure temperature on scrotum. Yeah, there you go. They also did a really similar experiment, but in this case, it was 11 bus drivers while they were sitting down.
Right. I don't think their occupation affects the heat of their balls.
It could. I mean, if you're an Arctic explorer.
Oh, shut up. That's not your occupation. It's because you're in the Arctic.
Or a fry cook. I mean,
a fry cook.
Yeah, you know, you're
frying off your balls.
You're frying food.
Again, that's not because of your occupation. It's because of the place you are. And I assume they wouldn't do this scientific experiment in the Arctic and in the kitchen.
You don't think people do scientific experiments in the Arctic?
I don't think they'd measure ball temperature in the Arctic.
Well, I mean, they probably would if they're, you know, worried about ball
probably,
health.
Probably colder than a firefighter's balls.
That's probably true.
Only when they're in fire.
Firefighters probably have quite cool balls because they go into fire a lot. So they'd want to have their balls be specifically cool. Otherwise, they'd overheat. You ought to think about that.
Ice pack them or something.
Yeah.
Please... Okay. Give us the next one.
I don't want to.
We've spent far too much of a percentage of this.
Talk about balls for a bit longer.
I feel like we should talk about balls for a little longer.
Yeah, I think we should.
So, on average, the left testicle is warmer than the right, which apparently contributes to the difference in size and shape of testicles.
Interesting testicle fact. Did you know that before they understood why the testicles descend during puberty, they thought that, I think this was the Romans, they thought that the reason why the male voice deepens during puberty was because the balls are dragging on the vocal cords, stretching them out.
They thought the balls were connected
Your
all the way up.
Your testicles are supposed to descend.
Shut up.
I mean, that makes sense, though.
Get help.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
They thought it was two little weights there to go, lower the voice by descending the balls.
It makes sense.
If you have no medical knowledge whatsoever.
You only know better because you've
been
taught better.
It also doesn't make sense because when you stretch a string, it gets higher in pitch, not lower.
Maybe it's pulling the top down.
No, it makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense. Do not forgive this stupid scientific theory.
To be fair, the Romans, it probably was the Romans because they're not very bright at all.
No,
I mean,
they built aqueducts.
Yeah, that's the one thing they did. And I'm pretty sure they stole those from the Greeks. Most of the things that the Romans came up with
piracy
were stolen from the Greeks, including their religion.
They just wouldn't steal an aqueduct.
For anyone not born in Britain, they're not going to understand that joke.
But... Australians will get that joke too.
We're
the exact same ad.
Wow. Yeah.
I think they've got it in America as well.
Oh. There you go.
It's a worldwide joke.
Cool.
Moving on. 5-year-old children produce about 0.5 liter of saliva per day.
Is that more than other people?
No, yeah, it is. It's higher than adults.
So, well, I guess, I mean, that's not a difficult one to, that's just a study. And the conclusion is that 5-year-old children produce 0.5 liter of saliva per day.
Drooly little mongrels, aren't they?
Yeah, but why would they?
Why would they?
Yeah, but why would they study that?
Because
that's the whole point of you is to try and the whole point of this, right, is to figure out why.
I forgot why there's so many the game.
Figure out why there's so many dehydrated children. I don't know.
You don't hydrate yourself with saliva.
Why do all of the children keep dying of thirst around the age of 5? I would guess it's a hormonal change thing.
Has it got anything to do with the enzymes in their saliva?
So the enzymes in their saliva are largely the same as in ours.
I just thought maybe they need more to digest their food.
Is it to do with chemical balancing of the mouth? Does something happen with bacteria in the mouth at that age? Or is it because teeth are falling out? These are some guesses.
These are incorrect guesses.
Okay.
No, it's... So kids have a slower production of saliva than adults, but they just eat more.
Right.
That's all. Oh. That's it. They just produce more because they eat more.
Hang on. Why is it specifically 5-year-old children make more saliva than every other age of child?
I assume they only tested
they just studied
on 5-year-old
children.
Yeah. Oh, they only studied 5-year-old children.
15 boys and 15 girls, and they all
so
they
it's
all
probably
produce about
just,
500
it's just children.
Yeah,
but they only tested 5-year-olds.
That's not even that much, to be honest.
That's really weird because in a scientific study, you're meant to have like a control one thing you control for, and for some reason, they're controlling for the age of the child. Rather than like the amount of food they're eating or like anything, literally anything else.
But the interesting part of that is they only control for age and it was all pretty much the same between boys and girls. They didn't control their eating or anything.
Mm.
Just mostly the same.
Sure, but it, like if I did a study...
That's this much. That's this much spit.
Ew.
That's, by the way, he's holding up a cup that's 0.5 liter.
It's not actually spit. But my point is what I preferred earlier.
I've been working on that for days, Luke.
My point being that if I wanted to do a study into like the length of hair that grows per day, and I conducted a study going, 27-year-old men hairs grow at 1 millimeter per day. Every other age also grows at 1 millimeter per day, and I randomly mentioned 27-year-old men for no reason. That's just so strange.
Yeah. But it's okay, like, okay,
if you the went Nobel Prize,
men's fingernails grow at 0.5 millimeter per day. Brackets, and also so do women's fingernails.
We just
so
tested
why did
men.
We mention men at all?
Okay, here's the thing. It's basically the same as adults, but kids are much smaller than adults.
Sure.
So that's interesting, isn't it?
That is interesting.
They make more spit.
I didn't notice.
They create proportionally more spit than adults.
Yeah. But for some reason.
Because they eat lots of food.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
But they probably eat less food than adults.
Probably not.
They eat more often.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
This is such a strange episode.
It's a strange one, isn't it? It's odd. I'm not going to pretend that it's not odd, Luke.
Hit me with another one.
Scratching an ankle itch feels even better than scratching other itches.
That is true. That is true.
How did they measure that?
They had a pleasure index.
How did the what is that just reported, like self-reported?
Yeah. So they they basically just asked people to scratch different parts of their bodies and then rate how good it felt.
I would guess the reason for that is that you have more receptors in the ankle because of things like rats and spiders and stuff that might try and climb up your legs. And so you've got a higher per inch receptor density on your ankles. Is that why?
They've not figured out why.
What?
Maybe you've just figured it out.
I think I've just figured it out.
You've probably figured it
Can
out.
Can I have an Ig Nobel Prize, please?
I mean, no. You've got to get this published. Also, we've not mentioned this. All of these papers are published in actual journals.
Sure.
So if you get that little...
Yeah, but so was the one that said vaccines cause autism.
Yeah, that was retracted.
Mean anything. It doesn't mean anything.
That was retracted.
No. Okay, so wait. So why did they win an Ig Nobel Prize if they didn't figure out why that is?
Because they weren't looking
they
to figure out why.
They just pointed out that it exists.
They proved that ankle itches, you know, are more pleasurable than other itches.
I don't need to know why.
That is super weird.
Yeah, so apparently...
Did they even hypothesize as to why?
No.
I did. I did that. And I'm just a person on a science podcast. And I went, here's maybe why. And you all went,
so they found that out and just went, cool.
I mean, presumably,
let's not look into why that is, but still publish it and accept
that
an award.
Weird. It just turns out to be like that.
That's how you can think about it, but then you've got to do other studies. They were just trying to see if ankles itch more. And they did find that not just ankles, but also your back.
Yeah, you get back scratching is amazing. Yeah.
Not just a better feeling, but you get a stronger itch.
Yeah.
And we've got specific kind of nerve pathways for itching.
I feel like that, though, the back scratching one maybe is that, like, you know how, like, if you're like a cave person, you come across a bunch of berries growing on a tree, you have the urge to, like, gorge on them because you don't know when you're next going to find some berries. And so that's what causes us to all overeat and have eating disorders and things like that, is the leftover
survival instinct.
Urge to survive. Yeah. I reckon the back scratching one is like, I can always scratch my arms. I can always scratch my legs.
Oh, because you can't like reach your back necessarily.
But if I can find something that scratches my back for me, I don't know when I'm next going to have that, like a person or like a tree. I might not have that in a while, so I should take it and enjoy it whilst I have it.
Okay. I'm not going to tell you that if I was to say this one, it would just give it away. So I'm going to just say two words. Wombat poop.
Wombat poop.
Wombat poop.
I vaguely remember hearing something about wombat.
On this one.
Oh, they're cubes, right?
Yeah.
They poop cubes. Like their cubes. Poop is cubic. Like a dice.
What?
Yeah.
That is mad.
That was something they found quite recently. It was in the past year or something.
Which is weird because for centuries, people would have just been seeing like cubes.
What are these cubes on the ground?
Cubes of poop and be like, well, let's not look into this.
Especially weird as cubes don't exist in nature, really. Like you don't get many like perfect six-sided cubes in nature.
Sugar cubes. sugar is natural.
Shut up.
They're not naturally cubic.
Chocolate bars. Chocolate bars. This cocoa's natural.
Well, chocolate Rubes bars cubes. Aren't cubes, are they? What? Silly boy.
Depends if you... Yes, they are. They are cubes.
No, they're not.
They're
cuboids.
Cuboids, right. Okay.
Yeah, cute boys.
Okay, so what's the reason why why wombats poo in perfect cubes?
Square anuses.
Squinus.
Squinus.
why don't you give us a guess? I don't want to give this one away just yet.
Do they poo the cuboid, or do they make it into a cube after they've pooed it?
No, they poo it cubed.
What?
It comes out quite square.
Is it flat on the top and bottom as well as on the sides?
Yes. It's a cube.
What?
Do you want to see a picture? I'll get you a picture.
Please. Get up a picture. It's so weird. I didn't believe it at first either, but when you see a picture, it is just like an almost dice kind of.
What? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Look yeah. like brownies.
Weird.
Just don't eat them.
Yeah, they look like little, you know when you get to like Tesco and you get like a little tub of
Those little brownies that they've got.
Little brownies or like little flapjacks or something, and they're perfectly cut cubes. That is so strange.
I wish my poop was that shape.
Why? So little muffins.
You could build a little wall with it. They're like little bricks.
Yeah. That is weird. Okay, right. So let's try and work out why that is then.
Even their heads are cubic. Look at them.
That's how it is. They put it in cubes and then they put it out cubes. That's not how it is. I actually know how it is. Would you like to know how it is?
I would like to know how it is.
So apparently it's elastic intestines. They've got particularly elastic intestines. So in the last 8% of a wombat's intestine, feces go from a liquidy state to a like small cubey state.
That is so weird.
Yeah.
It's going to irk me to my grave.
They inflated intestines of wombats to find this out. They weren't alive, presumably.
I was going to say, I hope they were not alive wombats.
What confuses me is that like I can kind of understand why there would be like cuboid on like four of the six sides. But I don't understand how the fifth and sixth side also end up cubed.
Yeah, being flat.
But because, if you think about it, if it's moving through the intestine, it's going to be pushed from all sides. And it can kind of turn
not around. From the top and bottom.
Yeah, because your intestines aren't straight.
Oh, right. So the intestine is like stretching out round the poop.
Mm.
And like as soon as it's gone from an area, that bit collapses back in an elastic way.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what it seems like.
Wow. And
these guys, what are their names? Patricia Yang and David Hu.
Yeah.
David Hu?
Who?
David.
Oh, David.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, David.
David Hu.
David.
Who?
David Hu.
Horton is a who.
I love this Doctor Who episode.
Horton is David.
This David, Doctor David.
But he's never heard that before.
Where was I going? Doctor David's and Patricia Yang's. It's not their first Ig Nobel Prize. They also won in 2015 for testing the theory that all mammals can empty their bladders in about 21 seconds.
Do they just scare a load of animals?
I mean, look, I just love that these guys, their entire field of study is just animal excrement.
When does the 21 seconds start?
When they start peeing.
When the first drop
when they said,
falls out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like from the first drop to the last drop.
Okay, I was imagining
no shaking
the start of the poo.
Oh, and isn't there like...
No, this is urine. Empty their bladder.
Oh,
bladder
okay,
is pee.
Okay.
I thought it was that all animals empty their bladder in 21 seconds. Like they all do it in roughly the same time. It's not like in maximum 21 seconds. It's like all of them roughly take this much time to
pee longer than 21 seconds.
They can empty it in 21 seconds.
There was some scientific study that said that like most wees last a certain amount of time.
Yeah, so I did also read that as well, that most urinations last about the same amount of time.
Really?
For some reason. Yeah. But if you think about it, it's a case of just the flow rate being higher or lower depending on the size.
Because if you're
a
bigger animal, you also have a higher flow rate, but you have more urine to pass.
I mean, think about it this way. A mouse has got a much smaller urethra than an elephant.
Yes. But yes.
So a lot more urine can come out at once.
Of
their urethra.
Yeah. But they also have more urine to pass.
Yeah. So it takes about 10 minutes.
Because they're an elephant.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Ah, perfectly
what
balanced.
I don't understand about the square poos is that if it's like squeezy intestines, which is what you're kind of explaining, I don't understand why it doesn't come out as a circle, as a sphere.
Well, it's not that squeezy, is it?
Yeah, but why is it pointy?
It's not rolling it like dough.
Why is it pointy?
It's not pointy. It's rounded.
Well, why is it like a Toblerone? Why four sides?
I don't know. I have not blown up wombat intestines, so I can't answer your questions for you.
Like a hexagon. Like a long hexagon. Why don't they shit perfect Toblerones?
Why don't you ask David Hu that question and see what he says?
David who?
David. David who?
David who?
Yeah, David who?
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 David.
Yeah. David. Oh, David.
Yes.
David who?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Doctor.
What's the next one?
The next one is about the rheology of cats.
What does rheology mean?
It's fluid dynamics. So
this
is liquid cats.
Cats has fluids.
Yes.
I saw a great thing on Twitter yesterday, but based on, not based on, but I mean, if remembering back to the episode that I did about particles being waves and also particles, there was a great video, an aerial video of a sheepdog herding in a load of sheep. And it said, this video proves that sheep are particles, but a herd is a wave. And the sheepdog was running around, and the sheep as a group behave like a liquid. It's so strange to watch. They like look like liquids, like they're influenced by each other's positions.
Yeah.
But each individual sheep obviously is a physical point of matter, but the herd behaves a lot according to fluid dynamics. I'll retweet it on the Side Guys Twitter.
You should do that.
I shall.
Yeah, please do.
I will.
It's interesting.
Good.
So, liquidy cats.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm trying to bring myself back.
So, what was this about? Was it about the fact that cats perfectly mold into whatever shape they're put into?
Yeah, so, I mean, cats effectively function as liquids. That was the whole point of this. So,
I love science sometimes.
But this, what I love about this paper, I read this paper way back at the start of the podcast, trying to do an episode on it, but I couldn't get through it. It was just so weird.
Conclusion, cats are liquid.
This is not going to fly as a whole episode. It's too weird.
I'll do it. Or James can do it.
It starts off with a Greek quote, which translates to everything flows. And everything flows and nothing abides. And it's true for cats, because cats can fit into like anything.
Yeah.
So he...
like octopuses.
Yeah, like octopuses, except cats
that's,
have...
That's weird to watch. Have you ever seen a video of an octopus going through something?
Yeah. They like can a fit tiny, through anything tiny that their beak can fit through.
Very strange.
Also, when people find out that octopuses have, like, beaks. So, effectively, what this person did was just study cats and do some maths based on...
An excuse to be around cats, wasn't
it? And do maths based on them being liquids. So there's this... there are these groups of equations in rheology to understand the flow rate and, you know, shear stress, which is like... just kind of movement and forces of liquids. And this person just decided to write an entire paper on that, but about cats.
To be fair, I have a theory that cats have a thick coat of fur so that the internal of the cat remains unobserved and can be a wave. And then when you're just looking at their coat and not looking at what's underneath,
change state.
The organs don't really exist, and they just exist as a wave of probability, so they can just be an actual liquid.
Schrodinger's cat, yeah. I have this note on my phone that says that cats exist between dimensions, and I don't know where it came from.
Because
they're weird, aren't they?
I don't think that's criteria for existing between dimensions.
Yeah, but they know too much. Have you ever looked into a cat's eyes?
Well,
they just...
there's an old... Buddhist saying that says, I have lived with many Zen masters. All of them are cats.
But cats live the best life. They've completely domesticated us into just doing everything for them.
I look at my cat a lot and I'm like,
you bitch.
Yeah. Screw you, man. You've won.
I mean, all Artie has to put up with is kind of me just swinging him like a pendulum every now and then.
Getting picked up every once in a while. Yeah.
And he gets a free life the rest of the time.
Exactly. He gets to go where he wants, do what he wants.
He's like, food now.
Does he?
Yeah. He goes up to his cupboard and he's like, give me food.
Or sometimes someone will leave and he'll get bored, so he'll wake everyone else up in the house to give him attention.
He will. If he's bored, he'll just go to everyone's door one by one and go, meow.
He knows when I get up for work because he sits outside my door and waiting for me every morning.
Lovely.
He's also started sitting where I put my shoes.
So you have to pay him attention.
You want your shoes? You'll have to at least look at me.
Yeah, so anyway.
Maybe cats don't exist. And they require us to observe them in order that they exist.
Oh my God, a bit like weeping angels.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cats are weeping angels. Amazing.
Wow.
Ig Nobel Prize for us, I think.
Mm.
You had enough about cats now? Yeah?
Never.
No?
But yes.
For now.
Good. You guys feeling hungry?
Oh, cannibal time.
It's cannibal time.
Cannibal time.
Although, I've got some bad news for you.
Oh.
Being a cannibal isn't all it's cracked up to be.
What is it cracked up to be?
You've got to eat the crack as well.
Oh, James.
It's a delicacy.
James. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
No.
Wow.
Well, kind of. Effectively. And this is kind of the inspiration for this episode. And I'll tell you why. Because someone that I know, a friend of mine.
Is it James?
It's not. No.
Is it you?
What? No.
Is it me?
I have other friends.
Do you?
Yes.
You exist outside of this podcast?
Yes.
I thought you were just the voice that came out the speaker.
Get out of my speaker.
Very rude, Luke. Very rude. No, this is just all your psychosis. This is happening inside your head.
Absolutely.
Wake up, Luke. Wake up.
I'm trying to wake up, Gori.
So I saw a tweet from one of my friends basically saying that he walked into a lecture and made a joke about eating someone.
Right.
And it turned out that his lecturer had actually written a paper on cannibalism and won an Ig Nobel Prize.
What?
Which is the person that won this prize, yeah. So that's the one that tipped me off to this cannibalism.
Man. Wow.
Yeah, he really put his foot in his mouth there.
Shut up.
Thankfully, he didn't eat him. Yeah, so...
What did he discover?
He was effectively...
What did he win? What did he win for?
Well, he won for writing an entire paper on cannibalism and how nutritious the human body is.
What? Yeah. How nutritious is it?
Not very.
Oh.
So it was effectively looking at kind of prehistoric era and how there were theories that, you know, humans or human type people could be eating each other for sustenance.
Sure.
Yummy.
But he thought that didn't really make sense. So he thought, let's figure out how, you know, nutritious people were to see whether it was worth actually eating people. So he took a 65 kilogram man, which...
And he ate him.
Well, yes.
And then he measured his vitamin C levels.
He measured how full he felt. 143 pounds, 65 kilograms, if you're American.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he figured out that 32,000 calories are in...
That's nothing.
Are in I was going to say, it's not a lot, is it?
It's like 2 days. Are in the muscle tissues.
In the muscle. Okay. That's like 2 weeks.
Luke, 32,000 calories.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant 3,200 calories.
No.
Sorry, no, I do eat 16,000 calories per day.
Wow. You look good, man. You look really good.
Thank you.
It all goes to his hips.
Because I'm a diver who's learning how to dive.
Okay.
Michael Phelps eat loads of calories. That's all I know.
He's not a diver. He's a swimmer.
I know. It's all water.
You made a diving reference in our last episode as well.
Did I?
You did. You said that exact thing. I'm a diver learning how to dive.
He's learning to dive. That's his thing.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, so 32,000 calories in human muscle tissues. And obviously, early humans hunted mammoths, which have about 3.6 million calories.
Whoa!
Yeah, so it doesn't really make sense to hunt and kill a human, which is probably harder to kill than a mammoth because they'll try and kill you back.
Yeah, they can kill you back and they're more agile.
Yeah, they're smarter, you know? So we've basically discovered that, you know, cannibalism wasn't really that big of a thing way back when.
Not worth it.
No, it's not.
Too much effort.
Probably for like the same reasons that it's a thing now. You know? Just desperation, going nuts, or you get your leg chopped off. Which actually happened. Have you seen that story?
Oh, the one about the plane. The plane crash?
No, a man had his foot amputated and then invited his friends around to eat it.
Oh. That was also quite recent, wasn't it?
That was about a year ago.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Weird.
I think we actually had a conversation about it, like, we would try it.
We did, because a few of our friends were having surgery and we wanted to eat them.
Well, Corey and I once spoke about making vegan black pudding out of our own blood.
Yes, I genuinely want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not technically vegan, but it's from ourselves. So.
Well, no, it's...
Well, you got
it's,
consent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like saying biting your nails isn't vegan.
Sure.
But it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's like saying biting somebody else's nails is like drinking their blood, which is definitely not.
You say potato, I say potato. It depends if it's consensual or not. Because I mean, if someone's biting your nails unconsensually, that's
sure,
pretty weird.
That's weird.
But I'd rather
drinking
somebody
blood
bite my nails than drink my blood without my permission.
No, because it's weirder
to bite someone's nails without permission than it is to drink someone's blood with permission.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. That's
no, but I can understand the joys of drinking blood is my point. Whereas biting nails is just disgusting.
Okay. Right. Well,
just gross little.
Good. Wasn't this fun?
So effectively, the conclusion of this cannibalism study was that we should be more careful about how we define cannibalism when talking about prehistory, because we should talk about the motives behind it to really give you pre-humans.
So what? Like, it's not cannibalism if it's out of desperation?
Well, yeah, no, in that we shouldn't talk about cannibalism as being something that people just did for fun.
Cannibalism is not an act, it's a mindset.
Well, yeah, let's put it that way.
Okay.
You know? Like boomers.
Yeah, boomer is not an age, it's a mindset.
It's a mindset.
It's a lifestyle, you know?
It's a lifestyle.
Look, I don't agree. It's my lifestyle choice, and you can't discriminate against me for it.
Okay, boomer.
We got one in. We got one in for it. Okay. And that's the end of all of my weird little Ig Nobels.
Hey. Nice one.
So tell us about how we're going to go to the Ig Nobels and we can take two people with us.
Shall I tell you about how we're going to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so effectively, you can go to the ceremony. Anyone is allowed to go to the ceremony. You just need to get tickets. But if you have five or more tickets, you can go as a group or as a company. We have three of us. If we can get two more people to get tickets with us,
yes,
we can go as a group. So if we just raise some money for next September.
What's the benefit as going as a group rather than just going?
You just get to have your own table.
That'd be quite nice, actually.
That guy's table at the Ig Nobel Prizes.
Where is it, though?
It's in Massachusetts. At MIT.
So we have to go to America.
We've got to go to America.
We're not going to be going for a while.
I think we can go. Not this year, but next year.
Okay.
No, hold on. No, when I say that, I mean not 2020.
2021.
But 2021.
So what you meant to say is, I think we can go not this year, but next year. Next year.
Exactly.
Yes.
No, but really, if you're ever around the Ig Nobel Prize, I would genuinely recommend going. It seems like such a fun time. They've got lots of traditions, like throwing paper airplanes up onto the stage. There used to be a man that
This sounds like a screening of The Room.
Yeah, it does.
It is. It's that same kind of vibe. It's just weird scientists that like weird things. But put it this way, most scientists are weird and not normal. But
yes.
Right? But you've got
that
two
is fact.
You've got two types. You've got the weird loner types and the weird not loner types.
Okay.
They're the not loner types.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
quite fun. I wouldn't have any other reason to go to Massachusetts, so.
No, exactly. No one would.
Exactly.
There's nothing else there.
Not even people who live there.
No, they leave. They only come back for the Ig Nobel Prizes.
And that's the end of the show. Corey insulting part of America.
I'll insult all of America. It sucks. Goodbye.
Whoa.
Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and YouTube, or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can find me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can find me at GMKin every week.
You can find me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sayonara.